Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view beginning April 20th. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Mississippi Arts Hour. I'm Larry Morrissey with the Mississippi Arts Commission, and this is Arts Commission's weekly turn at the microphone here at MPB, guided by our faithful producer, Kevin Farrell, behind the boards for us today. Each week, we come to you with an in-depth discussion with a different creative Mississippian. We talk to people, we talk to musicians, we talk to craftspeople, artists, and we talk to the Mississippi diaspora as well, people who've gone on to other places but still hold on to Mississippi. And today we have a special show. We're going to be talking about the late Mose Allison and a brand new tribute album that's just come out featuring a lot of different artists covering his work. And on the phone with us today is Allison's daughter, Amy Allison. Amy, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Good to be with you.
Thanks for your time today. And so this is there's a brand new, it's just come out, a brand new tribute album to your late father, Mose Allison, called If You're Going to the City. And it has all types of people on there doing some of the very well-known songs by your father, as well as some lesser-known ones. Tell us a little bit. Well, first, maybe you can talk over, just give people overview of some of the people that are featured on the album.
Well, it's a wide range of people. I mean, I think we could have had a double album, but because people were so responsive, you know, when we reached out to them, and there are, oh gosh, I hate to just name some and then not others. There are people in rock and country, and, you know, there's Jackson Browne, there's Chrissy Hynde, there's Iggy Pop, Loudon Wainwright, Fiona Apple, and, you know, there's, I don't want to, and Frank Black of the Pixies, who actually wrote, you know, the Pixies had a song about my dad called Allison, so.
I didn't realize
that.
That
was really
okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Allison. It's a great little song, you know, tribute to him, so. I think we just kind of started with people we knew or that we knew were fans, and it was me and Don Heffington, drummer out of L.A., great guy who's played with just about everybody, and we've been friends a long time, and you know, he brought Sheldon from Sweet Relief into it. So some of the tracks are recorded, sort of produced by them at Sheldon's studio. But a lot of the other ones were people just sent us, you know, they recorded it however they wanted it and wherever they wanted it and sent it to us. So,
So great. And so I was remiss to mention also this is coming out on Fat Possum, Oxford, Mississippi's hometown, our home state label is putting this out, and it's going to be in multiple formats. But starting out, so your father passed away in 2016. When did the kind of the gears start going to put this together? What was the initial kind of inspiration for this?
That's funny. I mean, it's not too long after. You know, I never think things like this can come together easily. I always think like, oh, how are we going to do that? You know, but I think I just sort of was talking to Don, and Don was like, we could do it, you know. He seemed to be more hopeful that it could actually, you know, materialize. And so then I just, you know, it just seemed to gain steam, you know, quickly. And but it was, I think it was not too long after he passed away that we started, you know, thinking about it.
And
that
I think,
he passed away in November of 2016. Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, he was, you know, it was throughout his lifetime, people were covering his work. So this is kind of just the latest iteration of it. It started back in the 1960s with a lot of the kind of the British invasion bands who really were into him as young people. But yeah. And you see a little bit of that here with like Richard Thompson, you know, kind of the first generation of fans. But it's also interesting to see people like you said, Frank Black and Fiona Apple, some kind of, you know, some younger people who are also involved in this as well, I guess, who saw him as an influence.
Yeah. I mean, it does, he seems to have, you know, been a musician that most musicians, you know, related to in some way, you know, I know some people that you wouldn't even, you know, it might not be obvious when you hear their music, but there's something relatable that they just seem to really admire and be inspired by.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably one of the more surprising ones is Iggy Pop on here. Of course, he's from that first generation, but definitely kind of, at least in presentation, a lot different from Mose Allison.
I know. He was really great. He was just like, oh, you know, I think I had a suggestion for a song, and he's like, that's exactly what I was going to do. And he was, I don't know him personally, but, you know, our emails were very friendly, and he sent us that great track that he just did in Miami with, you know, a friend of his, and, you know, that was very thrilling.
Yeah. So you started getting the word out. Some people started, you know, wanting to be involved. How did you go about with the, you know, there's some of his most well-known songs people cover on here, as well as some more obscure ones. Was it up to the artist, or were there, you know, how did the song choice process work?
It was up to the artist. You know, I think there were some things maybe, you know, where I had an idea, but I would never, you know, I if somebody had a strong impulse to do a certain song, you know, that was fine. You know, I wanted them to do what they really, but, you know, I wanted them to do what they wanted.
And so when these started coming in, were there any that in particular kind of like surprised you in terms of their approach, or, you know, either the song choice or how they went about performing it?
Robbie Foulkes is a good example. He did one like from my dad's last record, the one that was produced by Joe Henry. Called My Brain, and he just did like a really incredibly creative version of it, and that kind of took us all by surprise. And, you know, but that's Robbie, he's really great. And then you know, there's lots of them that just looking at it right now, I mean, some of them were live, you know, tracks like mm-hmm. Bonnie Raitt, and then Richard Thompson. And that was nice. And, you know, I know Dave Alvin, and they, you know, I think that they just happened to talk to Sheldon or Don and was like, oh, my God, we want to do it. And they knew the song they wanted to do. And then Frank chose a really obscure song that I love called Numbers on Paper. And, you know, that's really lovely. And Elvis Costello sang with me on a track, which was really nice. And Anything Mose is the name of this band that, they're all distinguished jazz musicians, but they put together like a combo to do all my dad's songs, and they called themselves Anything Mose, and they did the track too. And anyway, am I answering the question?
You did. You did perfect.
And Jackson Brown was really surprising.
Cause, yeah.
You know, I mean, he's like, you've known him forever. And,
right.
And I wouldn't have, you know, automatically thought, oh, yeah, he loves my dad.
We can get him, right.
It was great. Yeah, he just was completely into it, so.
You're listening to the Arts Hour. I'm Larry Morrissey, and we're talking by phone today with Amy Allison. She's the daughter of the late Mose Allison, who's the piano player, singer, songwriter, and originally from the Mississippi Delta. And there's a brand new album out on Fat Possum called If You're Going to the City. It's a tribute to Mose Allison, featuring a lot of different musicians who we've been talking about doing his work. So let's talk about let's talk a little bit about your track that's featured on here with Elvis Costello. How did that first? I'm guessing Elvis was a fan of your father's work.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he's said a lot of great things. He did. There was a tribute done here by J.C. Hopkins Band, and I asked Elvis to sing with me, and he did. And you know, I've also known him in conjunction with my music too. He's been really supportive of my songwriting and my records, and you know, so I have a history with him, you know, apart from, you know, my dad. But yeah, he's incredibly generous. He sent one of my songs to Emmylou Harris, and she recorded it on her last record.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, so he's been very, very supportive of me and just, like, agreed, you know, just to, you know, yeah, I'll sing that song with you. And anyway, it ended up being included here, so.
Well, the song Monsters of the Id comes from an early 70s record by your father. It's kind of an interesting record in that it's kind of like a big, kind of almost not a big band sound, but definitely a large horn section kind of working.
Right.
Unlike a lot of his records, which were trios or quartets, this was like a big sounding record. What are your memories of that? Did this song go back? Did this song stand out to you like in childhood, or talk about your history with this?
I think it always did, yeah. You know, it was so kind of creepy, but really, and I loved the arrangement with the horns and stuff. My dad did all the arrangements on that record, and I think it's the only time he did kind of a big band arrangement thing. And, so we did it a little differently, but up until, you know, he stopped playing, he was doing that song live, and you know, it was just as haunting and as it always was, you know. And, you know, and just very apt, you know.
How did you when you and Elvis were kind of prepping this, how did you talk about, like, how you wanted to do it differently from the original recording?
Well, you know, we recorded the song. I recorded the song for my record, and then we asked him to, it occurred to me, it's like, wouldn't it be cool if I asked Elvis to share the song, you know, to duet with me? And he did. So he just kind of entered in after it was done, you know, after the track was, you know, all the other instrumentation was on there and stuff.
Right.
So it was really Don Heffington who was the co-producer of this, If You're Going to the City. And he was the one who was at the helm or whatever. And he hired the musicians. He produced the track and hired the musicians that came and played. And then he got Elvis Costello in his little studio, which is awesome.
That is awesome.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
If you ever miss one of our locally produced shows or want to simply hear it again, you can find what you need at mpbonline.org or download our podcast app to your smartphone. MPB programming is on your schedule at mpbonline.org.
We're back on the Arts Hour. I'm Larry Morrissey, and today we're talking, remembering Mose Allison. There's a brand new tribute album out to him called If You're Going to the City on Fat Possum Records, and we're talking with his daughter Amy Allison on the phone today about the record. You had mentioned off mic, we wanted to make sure and recognize the contributions of Chrissy Hynde from The Pretenders on this record.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that she was a fan because I'd read her, you know, I guess there was a piece in her autobiography where she said really lovely things about him. And so I knew that she was a fan, and I thought how great it would be to get her. And then I actually had a friend who knew her manager, and that's how I got to her. But she responded immediately, and she also put us in touch with Iggy. So I really owe her thanks. You know, she's been great.
And let's make sure and mention, so part of the proceeds from the record are going to go to the Sweet Relief organization. Could you tell mm-hmm. folks a little bit about Sweet Relief?
Sure. It's the Sweet Relief Musicians Fund, and it's for people, for musicians in need, really. And a lot of it is health, you know, people who don't have insurance. And it started out with Victoria Williams. I think a lot of her friends and got together, other artists, and covered her songs to contribute to her medical bills. And then she very generously, like, I think, allocated an amount that, or just said, let's make this a permanent thing. And so now it's been going for years, you know, since the 90s, I think. God, I hope I'm not saying the wrong thing. I mean, as far as I know, I think it's been going on that long. And
yeah,
and,
I think you're right.
Yeah, and it all started there. And, you know, they do great work. You know, they really help out musicians who, you know, are in a bad spot. So
yeah, and it's you know, the journeyman musicians as well, not just the big names, but a lot of these folks who.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's important to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm thinking, I was reading the biography on your dad that came out in, like, about the mid-90s, and thinking about some different themes kind of from his life. And, you know, his upbringing in the Mississippi Delta was obviously very formative and kind of informed him as a person. How did that, you know, his childhood kind of express itself in your family growing up?
Huh, that's funny. Yeah, well, we spent a lot of time in Mississippi, you know, in the town and on the farm. You know, like, there was a farm where he was born, and there was a house that was up, like, until I was an adult, you know, mm-hmm. that it was abandoned, you know, but still standing. And you know, my grandmother lived there, and my cousins and my aunt and uncle. So we used to go pretty often. So we had, like, firsthand kind of feel for what it was like for him. But, you know, of course, when he was young, it was, you know, they didn't have electricity. They didn't, but, you know, I think he worked in his dad's store. I think he helped with the farm, and and the main thing is that he says he heard such a variety of music, you know, that he got inspiration from, which, you know, blues. He said they were all kind of blues and country blues, and then, you know, boogie woogie and jump. I know, I think he said Louis Jordan and, you know, all kinds of jazz. Nat King Cole was really big. His trio was a big influence. So he just, it seems like he just, and probably country music too. I know my dad used to like Lefty Frizzell for one, you know.
Oh, really?
Like, so, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, he just had like a real wealth of influence, you know. And you know, he said it used to be on the jukebox at the gas station or wherever. And so I imagine he spent a lot of time there, you know. And I think he started playing piano at like school things, you know, and he wrote funny songs. He wrote a song called The 14-Day Palmolive Plan, which was about, you know, making fun of ads on radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have a feeling he was kind of lonely as a kid. I don't know, but also he had like this great, you know, stuff in the air, you know, the music, you know, the music was, yeah.
So was there a lot of music being played when you were growing up? Was that something was he listening to a lot of records or practicing around the house? Was that a big element of that?
Yeah, I mean, he listened to, he had some records that, you know, still are like some of my favorite records, like he had a Billie Holiday early record, and he had a record by Jerry Southern, who's a singer that I really like. But he himself listened to a lot of 20th century, contemporary composers, you know. And also I remember he had like an album of an album I was obsessed with was a Sabikas record, like a flamenco record.
Oh, wow.
And then he had the guitar player, and then he had stuff like Romanian folk songs or he loved a lot of... like Bartok and Scriabin and Hindemith and Ives and I don't know who else. But you know what I mean? He was real interested in contemporary classical as well as, other stuff.
Yeah.
But I think he listened to that because he thought it was challenging. I think that, I think he evolved so much as a piano player and it sort of, I think it gave him new ideas, new directions.
New ideas.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Arts Hour. I'm Larry Morrissey, and we're talking by phone today with Amy Allison. She's the daughter of Mose Allison, and we're talking about the new tribute album that's just come out called If You're Going Into the City, which a bunch of different musicians are doing songs by Mose Allison. Jumping off of that idea of kind of always challenge yourself, I read there's a really nice remembrance by Ratso Harris, who was a bass player who worked with him a lot. And he talked about kind of like, that when he first started playing with him, he thought, I know his songs, I grew up hearing them on the radio. And then when he got there to the gig, he was doing them completely different. he was a totally different piano player than he was, in the 60s. And this was, I guess, by the early 1980s. So I saw that theme a lot and, kind of always. Can you talk a little bit about his need to always kind of push forward in terms of musically?
Well, I think he said, the main thing for him was playing live,
Yeah.
Because, there was, you never know what was going to happen. Improvisation was, that was like the main thing for him is that, he loved that moment where something comes together and it just happens, and you don't expect it and you don't plan it. And I think that was really important to him. I'm trying to think of a quote that he used to use, which was, I can't remember what it was, but it was all about how, improvisation was so important. And I think that's why he didn't really like recording so much.
Yeah.
Is because he just wanted to be there playing and not thinking about being heard, just kind of feeling it and thinking it at the same time,
Yeah, I saw a quote where he said, records are just shadows, and that, so they weren't important. And I like the idea of
funny.
A lot of people, there was... A lot of jazz musicians, want to have that core group around them all the time, where it seemed like from reading about him that he liked the challenge of every week, every week it was a new bass player and a new drummer that he was kind of interacting with.
Yeah, I think that he felt, that kept him fresh. It kept it interesting. It's like, I think that's true.
Well, let's listen to another track off the album. Let's take another quick music break. This one, okay. I picked out another one. I don't know if you have anything, but I saw Charlie Musselwhite, who's a fellow native Mississippian from Kosciuszko, Mississippi, does a track here on with his now partner, kind of, they've been doing a lot of records together, Ben Harper.
Yeah, that's a great one. And they chose Nightclub, which is not, I don't think that's like one of the first tier songs that people know. So, and it's it's a really good example, you know, of my dad's humor, and, you know, so I think it's, yeah, they did a great job.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the plight of the journeyman musician, and Charlie Musselwhite,
exactly,
who knows that just as well. There's so much authenticity
right.
coming from him about,
that
idea
they,
of...
They can relate.
Absolutely.
Relate. Yes.
I'm here tonight. Okay. I'll be somewhere else tomorrow night. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
On Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, you get information about foods you should eat to stay in good health and tips on how to stay active. I'm Dr. Josie Bidwell, host of Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, and Associate Professor of Preventive Medicine at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Joining me on the show each week are healthcare professionals who add their expertise to the discussion. Listen to the show every Monday at 11 or subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy with your preferred podcasting app.
We're back for the final segment of the Arts Hour. I'm Larry Morrissey, and our guest today is Amy Allison. She's the daughter of the late Mose Allison, and there's a brand new tribute album out paying tribute to him called If You're Going to the City on Fat Possum Records. One of the other kind of themes that I was hoping we could talk about is, you know, Mose Allison as the lyricist, and everyone, you know, constantly talks about his, you know, his... what a great lyricist he was. And I, in the biography, it talks a little bit about kind of his, you know, that he ended up an English major at LSU. And I guess at some point was trying to do some writing. And I've also mm-hmm. read that he was, you know, a big reader. So I was curious about kind of the writing and reading side of him.
Yeah. I mean, I know that he did some writing when he was younger, like short stories, and my mother has them, and she says they were really good. And, you know, I think he did explore that. And, yeah, he's a huge reader, you know. He read, I think when you know, in my, maybe, I'm not sure about when he was younger, but he read lots of nonfiction, lots of history, lots of things about the cosmos, and, I mean, just all kinds of esoteric stuff, you know, but he was always reading. Yeah.
And your mother was an English teacher as well, right?
Yeah, so there was yeah, kind of my mother was an English teacher. Yeah, that's true.
So the written word was equally important, I guess, in your household.
Yeah, I think definitely. Yeah.
Well, and one of the other themes I wanted to get at was kind of his independence and how he, you know, I guess he was interesting when he became a recording artist at that point. You know, a lot of, especially kind of in the rock realm, somebody will start and they'll be in their early 20s and maybe a little more impressionable in terms of someone telling them what to do, where Mose Allison was probably almost 30 by the time he started as a kind of a recording artist. You know, he had worked a lot mm-hmm. with other musicians.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about kind of his, like how, you know, he had this really firm idea about what he was about and what he was going to do?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Like he was always, I think he was just somebody who couldn't, you know, he just did it his own way. I don't think he could imagine I suppose when he was really young, he would try to sound like somebody or, you know, that he admired. But I know his first record, Backcountry Sweet, you know, was like mostly, you know, instrumental sketches, like based on, I think he said that, I think... Bartok had done something based on like Romanian, some kind of, I don't know if it's Romanian, whatever, folk song.
Yeah, the folk songs of his land, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that my dad sort of used that as sort of like an inspiration for Backcountry Sweet. And then, you know, once people heard him sing, they wanted to hear him sing more, you know, you know, he's never... he's always just, I feel like he's totally unique. Like, I think his piano style is, it's not like anybody else, I don't think, right. You know? And it really is like a convergence, you know, of his influences. It's like, but he's definitely got his own thing. And he had, you know, when he would tell musicians that played with them, you know, he would give them specific, like, no, I don't want any backbeat. I don't want, he wanted, I think he felt like that was too regimented. You know, he just wanted. In my life, he's just always been just who he is. You know what I mean? He's just very, like, you're never going to get, you're always going to get him, you know, I never heard him say anything he didn't mean or didn't, you know what I mean?
Right.
He's just somebody who's very honest and very plain spoken and, thought a lot about stuff, you know, and was really decent and had a lot of integrity.
Yeah, it seems like a very well-told story of him. You know, he was on Atlantic Records, which was a legendary label for many years, and the kind of one of the legendary producers there, Jerry Wexler, wanted to send him down to Muscle Shoals, Alabama, where Aretha Franklin and the Staple Singers, all these groups were going down there and getting these, you know, top 10 hits. And he was like, you should go down. And Mose Allison was like, no, that's not what I do. Just, you know, rejected out of hand. Right. So.
I know. He did a lot of, and I would have liked to hear that record. That's what, you know.
I think it would have been an interesting record, you know. I think it would.
I do too, yeah. Of course. I mean, it would have been great. But I understand, like, he was never driven by any kind of, like, trying to please the powers that be or, you know, make money. He was just kind of like, he did his own thing and he was like fine with that. And, it just didn't happen because he said he liked the trio. He said that was what he really felt was his, I would have liked to hear that record too, you know.
Yeah, I think it could have been interesting. But I can imagine at the time it was like, you want to turn me into a pop star, and you know, and he's a 30-something year old father of four, and you know, pretty
That's
unlikely.
True. He was always pretty, skeptical of like the commercially driven, you know. Yeah, he was definitely not into that.
Yeah.
You know?
You're listening to the Arts Hour, and our guest today is Amy Allison. We're talking about the new tribute album that's just come out in tribute of her father, the late Mose Allison, called If You're Going to the City, that's on Fat Possum Records. Let's switch it up a little bit and talk about, now you are a singer and a songwriter yourself, and I'm curious to hear about kind of, and you've kind of been a lot in the kind of country and country pop realm. So how did that growing up on Long Island where, and the son, the daughter of a not totally, you know, in the jazz realm artist, how did that come about?
Well, I think, you know, I was always, you know, my dad set an example that, you know, that you're an individual and you're influenced or you do whatever you feel. And I, when I was young, I saw Loretta Lynn on TV and I really just, you know, fell in love with her. And then I just started writing country songs and, you know, so it was always kind of, in the country, vein that I started writing. But I think that, you know, it's definitely covers a lot of ground now. It's not just country, but that's what started it, you know. And,
Where was, now, in the, when you were coming up, of course, there wasn't, you know, satellite radio and stuff. So where was there country radio in Long Island in the 60s and 70s? Or how did you hear it?
If there there was, I didn't hear it. I don't know where, but I heard it on, like, what happened was, like, for instance, with Loretta Lynn, I went out and I think I was looking for a record of hers, like, at the local Sam Goody's for, like, weeks. And then finally I found one, you know. So it was like back then when you didn't have access, ready access to everything, it was like the Holy Grail, you know, you finally, and then I would just, and then, I can't, you know, I remember going to the library and getting, like, collections out of the library, like Armed Forces Radio or whatever, you know.
Oh, yeah, those are some, those are good. Some of those are really good.
I know.
Yeah.
So that I would do that, and, you know, again, I don't know how, but I ended up just being a big fan of, but, you know, I'm influenced by it. Everything, though, you know, a lot. I mean, you know, but I think as far as my voice, I mean, I don't just mean my physical voice, but, you know, my expressive whatever voice. It's like country music. Country really suited me, you know.
Yeah.
So, I thought the songs had a lot of humor, a lot of wordplay, a lot of, you know, feeling, and, you know.
Yeah, sounds like somebody we know too. Yeah, like. Kind of coming out of your father's, you know, in the same school in a lot of ways.
Right.
So what were when you decided to finally kind of get on stage, where were the outlets for in the New York area for someone to do acoustic music like that at the time?
Well, you know, it just so happens that I was part of like this whole alt country scene in, that happened. It probably happened a little. I mean, I started in a performance space. It was like performance art. And I just happened to, they would have all kinds of, you know, acts and stuff. And then they'd have a musical act. And I started there. But there was a big scene of like, of alternative country music in Manhattan then, you know, and Brooklyn when I was coming up. So it's actually, I played a lot, you know. I found all kinds of places to play, and then, you know, my first album came out in the mid '90s. Even though I had been playing for a while, I've been playing really ever since. You know, I mean, not as much now as then because there just aren't as many places to play.
Yeah,
you know.
Seems like a lot of the old haunts have been chased out of at least Manhattan in terms of performance spaces.
Definitely. Yeah? Oh yeah, it's true. Yep.
Is that something that's gonna? Are people? Is there a readjustment in terms of new types of spaces coming open? Or.
Well, you know, I'm not so totally in the know, but you know,
okay.
Like I know there are. There are young people. I think Brooklyn is like a big scene. You know, there's a lot of music there. But I mean, for what I did particularly, and there just seemed to be a good niche. You know, back it was like in the late '80s and then the '90s. You know, and then I had another band that I started in the mid '90s called Parlor James with the founder of Lone Justice. And he, Ryan Hedgecock. So we did a couple of albums that were on Fire Records. But I do have a new. It's so funny because I just got copies of my new record, which is it's called Pop Tunes in the Setting Sun, and the title comes from one of the songs about when I lived in Memphis.
Oh, okay.
It's funny, and it, you know, so that's my, it's called Pop Tunes in the Setting Sun. Did I say that?
Yeah. and that's a tribute to Memphis, or is there a Memphis vibe to
it?
Or?
There's a song, the first song on the record is Blue Plate Special, and that's about the time when I was young that I lived in Memphis for like 9 months. So it's just kind of like before, like, you know, I got married in Mississippi. So me and my husband at the time, you know, before we got married, and then after we got married, we lived in Memphis because it was nearby and we were like he was English, and we just didn't know where to, we thought, oh, we'll go to Memphis, you know, because we're getting married in December in Mississippi. So, you know, so it was just, so it's like in my mind, it's this real set time, you know.
Oh, okay.
So that's what the, that's where the title comes from. It's part, it's in that song, Blue Plate Special, the first one.
Yeah. And then one of your, you mentioned also, tell us about the song, Emmylou Harris recorded one of your songs recently.
Yeah, she and Rodney Crowell on this, The Traveling Kind. It's the, it was their second duet record, I think. Joe Henry produced it. And yeah, so she, apparently I was told that she had really loved the song for a while, which was like mind blowing to me. And then I found out that Elvis Costello had actually sent her the song, and that was great. That was really nice too. And she,
yeah.
So it's on, I think it's The Traveling Kind, and the name of the song is Her Hair Was Red. And that's actually written about my father's mother.
Okay. Your grandmother. Okay.
You know, yeah, my grandmother who, yeah, her name was Maxine.
Maxine.
For anybody in Mississippi listening who knows Maxine Allison, she was a teacher too.
Yeah, it sounded like she had quite an influence in the community from the biography. Kind of
yeah.
Talked about her as kind of a pretty vibrant person in that community.
Yeah, well, she was.
Well, we got to head out, but I want to make sure and let everybody know that the new record, tribute record, if you're going to the city, it's out now on Fat Possum Records, and so you can find it wherever records are sold, as they say. For people who are interested in learning more about your music, where should they go?
They could just, you know, they can just Google that me or the title. I also have a website, amyallisonmusic.com. And then Fat Possum has a lot of good coverage for the new, like they, if people can go to their website, it's also, my father, there's also a website for my dad, which is just moseallison.com.
Yeah, and it's got some great photos and all kinds of stuff on there as well.
Yeah, right. And they use some really great photos in the package. And also included in the package, you know, is that, I don't know if we didn't really mention this, but the DVD by Paul Bernays. It was the BBC 4 documentary called Ever Since I Stole the Blues. So
oh,
that's
okay.
Part of the package. Yeah, so
excellent.
That's just a free extra. It's a documentary, and it's really great. So, yeah, just so people know that it, when they buy, if you're going to the city, it'll include that.
Great, great.
As well.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. And hi to everybody in Mississippi.
Yeah. For those of you who are tuning in late and would like to share the show with a friend or listen back, you can go to the MPB website at mpbonline.org. They post all the past shows, streaming files. You can also download or subscribe to the show as a podcast on your favorite podcast app. So until next time, we'll be seeing you around.
I'm Allison Walker, the Lady Auto Mechanic, host of AutoCorrect. If you're enjoying this podcast, try my podcast, AutoCorrect. We help steer you in the right direction with your car problems. Find me on any podcast platform or at autocorrect.mpbonline.org.